Tiger Bomb Sports Audio Entertainment presents The Process. Welcome back to your home for football and fantasy football, where we learn, scout, win, and repeat. Time to continue the process. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Ralph Lark, coming at you for another episode of The Process. We're going to continue all the way through. So excited to get something to you with the conference championships in mind this weekend. But it's not just that. This is actually going to be a very special show. We're going to call this the Everything Show because there's a lot going on. There's a lot to talk about. So we're going to venture outside of the world of football today on a one-time basis only. And we're going to talk some baseball. That's right. That's right. We're going to talk some baseball. We're going to talk a little college football, and then we're definitely going to cover our usual bases with the NFL action. We're going to talk about what happened this past weekend with the divisional round, and then we're going to take a look to this weekend with the conference championships game. So, real exciting episode for you this week. couple of places where you guys can listen to The Process. Great podcast, in my own biased opinion. And if you like listening to podcasts, you want to do the on the work thing, on the commute home, maybe you're at your desk, this is the perfect thing for you. Especially with all the fantasy knowledge we usually drop during the season. See, we switch gears a little bit because it's the playoffs now. We don't have like the weekly DFS, blah, blah, blah. And don't get me wrong, still covering DFS this week, but it's a little different now that there's two games. So, what you want to do is like and subscribe to the podcast. And you can, anywhere you listen to a podcast, just search for Tiger Bomb Sports Audio Entertainment. Spotify, iTunes, all that good stuff. We're in there, Tiger Bomb Sports Audio Entertainment. Hit the like and subscribe button. This way you'll get everything that we have coming for you. Not only this podcast, but again, like I said, we talked baseball today. But really, if you're into baseball, there's a podcast we have called The Heart of the Order, and that'll be what you'll want to listen to for everything baseball. So check it out. If you like, you can actually visit the website, www.tigerbombsae.com. You can click on the process page. There's just a couple of tabs at the top there. Just click the one that says The Process. It'll take you right to this page. You can listen to the podcast. During the season, you can get extra information like the DFS picks for the week, you know, my overall picks for the games and stuff like that. Now you can still listen to the podcast, though. Like I said, all the way through the Super Bowl, this stuff was still going to be posted there. So check it out, www.tigerbombsae.com. And a lot of people come to the podcast off of, like, finding the page on Facebook. Like, they, you know, peruse at work and stuff like that. So, hey, if social media is your thing, you know, Facebook and Twitter, search us out the same way, at The Process, TBSAE. You can find this podcast, you can listen along, and get a lot of information, a lot of statistics, a lot of analysis, a bunch of good free information that will do what you want for you, help you be a better fantasy player, help you just sound a little bit more knowledgeable. Maybe you try and get in with a group of people that do know their sports stuff. However you need it, I'm going to serve it up right here for you. And those are the ways you can find us. You can even email us here if you want. TheProcess@TigerBombsae.com. All right, that's all the important stuff right there. Now let's switch segments over to also important stuff, but more to the nitty-gritty. So we've talked about all the stuff we're going to go over today, and let's just start things off with the divisional round review of the NFL action last week. So we'll just quickly kind of go over, you know, what happened with all those games and how we get set up for today, for this weekend, rather. Divisional round. Vikings first up at the 49ers last weekend and ended up getting their, you know, you know what's handed to them, 10-27. And this is a game that I thought that they had a chance to win, but couldn't, you know, do enough in the passing game to make the 49ers adjust what they were trying to do. The 49ers also brought a tremendous amount of pressure on the few dropbacks that Kirk Cousins did have. I think he was pressured a lot. And, you know, they've shown the enormous potential that that pass rush has in the playoffs. And that's what's really, you know, driving things that they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. All around, they just look like the better team and they play that way. And so that was, you know, kind of the end of the road, you know, for the Vikings. And for them, as we said, you know, in this one, you know, they weren't able to exploit their weapons to the best of their abilities, meaning Thielen and Diggs. And it's just a credit to the 49ers secondary, which again, you can be dynamic when the pass rush is as intense as it was for Kirk Cousins last weekend. So the Vikings have an offseason to kind of figure things out, because that division is tough. And so, you know, everybody's mounting back up for another year. And so they'll have to, you know, try to think about some things and think about where they go from here. Ultimately, they do need some help on the O-line. Their defense, in turn, was not able to stop the run when they needed it most. And they weren't able to shift the 49ers away from what they wanted to do. The one thing I will say, though, is Jimmy G, like, they, you know, Kendricks picked them off later in the game, and he almost picked them off earlier in the game. He has a propensity to make mistakes, right? 14 interceptions, and he can get a little overwhelmed and make a turnover. So that's something that I think moving forward is probably, you know, maybe not going to serve them as well, but it was on display there too. The Vikings tried their best to get after him, but they weren't able to ultimately capitalize on those, you know, those turnover situations offensively when they had the chance. And it was because Kirk Cousins and company just couldn't really get the ball down the field like that. So that is that game, guys. Moving on, we also had this weekend the Seahawks at the Packers, and, you know, 2023 Green Bay. And what we thought Green Bay would win, but this one's a little bit closer than we suspected it would be. And what it really came down to is the Seahawks had no answer for Devontae Adams. You know, putting rookies on them, short rookies at that, mismatch, you know, in, you know, third and fourth situations, not good. So that's the story of that team. They had no run game after their running backs got hurt. End of the story, right? Like, it's not that overall Green Bay was a better team this year, but the injury bug caught up to Seattle at the end of the day. That's just the way that it went, right? Secondary, they had no answer for Devontae Adams. You know, Aaron Rodgers was able to just force feed him, and they couldn't really get around that issue. So that's where that game went. And it was a lot closer, like I said, than we thought it was going to be. Aaron Jones had a decent day too. So Packers advance. Now moving over to the AFC side of things. Texans 31, Chiefs 51. Man, Texans up 24-0. You know, you'd be thinking, as a Texans fan, things are looking good, right? But isn't it phenomenal to think that by halftime, it was 28-24 Chiefs, and they just never looked back from there? You know, Bill O'Brien did some questionable things on fourth down, you know, with regard to going for it, not going for the fake punts. You guys have all seen all the stuff out there. It's just stuff like that where you're squandering, because of these bad decisions, squandering good teams. You know, you have to strike while the iron's hot. No team is guaranteed to be in the postseason position year after year after year. You know, you can't take that for granted. And when I think about Houston, I just think that this is a good team with some good players, but they have some limitations on the coaching side. That was on display for sure. And of course they have some limitations on the defensive side, like in their secondary. Like, they're just terrible. They brought in some guys, but you brought in like bad guys. You know what I mean? You brought in like Vernon Hargraves. You brought in, they just brought in dudes that weren't doing well where they were before anyway. So this didn't work out in their favor. End up having the Chiefs put 51 up on them, and we knew the Chiefs were going to win just because, you know, you can't. You know what you're going to do? You're trying to be Kansas City in Kansas City twice in one season. As we talked about last show, that was probably not going to happen. So, and it didn't. And then finally, Titans 28, Ravens 12. In this game, you know, let's not forget what happened. And let's not re-remember it in a different way. Let's not be jaded by the way the announcer's telling it, because they're just doing their jobs. They're, you know, selling the story. But let's all be real about what happened here. First and foremost, yes, Lamar Jackson could have played better, but this is not all on him. And you're going to have to listen to why that is. When you look at, okay, so the Titans get points off turnovers, right? And so they're up 14-0 right away, okay? This is not necessarily, like, so the first interception, that's through Mark Andrews' fingers, right? Like, he should have caught that ball, but he doesn't. And he has two hands on it. Just as it catches it, bobbles it up in the air. That's an interception. They score off that, right? To exacerbate things, like, fourth and inches twice in this game, they don't get it. That's not on him. It's on an O-line. You can go back. The podcasts are still up right there. And wherever you're listening, you can hear in my very first, like, in the assessment of the Baltimore Ravens, which is one of the first ones I did. So we're talking one of the first couple of podcasts. This is August. We said the offensive line is the big issue here for this team. They needed to be better at the offensive line. That was their downfall. When you can't get fourth and inches, when you don't have a push, people are saying, oh, well, Lamar didn't get forward at all. There was nowhere to go. Everybody was right in his face, and it's because their offensive line is terrible, and they're able to do a lot despite that because of his style of running and the play calling and the play styles. But, you know, this is when we're talking about you just need to surge forward for a couple of inches, not a club or not a group that could get the job done. So that's, you know, not necessarily, you know, the drops and the inability to get the push at the line. I'm not putting all that just on him. That's fair, I think. So they also don't have any legitimate weapons to throw to besides Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews. So, you know, when you think about what the Titans want to do, first of all, they were able to get out early off those turnovers, get that early lead, and then you can cruise and you can just run Henry, right? This plays into exactly what they want to do. The Ravens, for their part, weren't able to, and it's not to say people are thinking, oh, okay, so this is what you do. You force Lamar Jackson to pass. That's not true. Teams tried that in the regular season, and it didn't work. The issue here, like I said, is the offensive line. He's going to need a little bit of time when he needs to throw. He can't be under duress every time. Now, he did make some pretty bad mistakes, you know, trying to make things happen when the game, I still felt, wasn't out of hand. Even when we're talking 21-6, not out of hand, right? But a lot of mistakes were made. But initially, which really determines the rest of the way the game goes, the things that went wrong were not on him, in my opinion, initially. And he eventually started to do too much and unravel. That's the big difference right there. So, and, you know, this is not to say you got to blow it up. You need to fix the offensive line. You need to give him more viable weapons in the passing game so the teams can't go 8 in the box and just let it ride out in the secondary, because you got nobody out there, right? Like, once you take care of Marquise Brown. So, you know, that's a little bit of why they weren't able to win that game and what they can do to get better for next year. But the Titans, meanwhile, you know, were able to execute what they wanted to do to a T. So when you look at the road to get to the conference championships, number one, you go through, you know, Bill Belichick and company. Now, you know, that's the champion last year. And like I said, we talked all year about these familiar matchups based off the staff of Vrabel coming from New England, coming from Belichick, you know, understanding what they want to do, understanding what they need to do to beat them. Belichick's pupils usually handed to him more than half the time, I believe. So, you know, this time Vrabel was able to do that. And then they move forward and they take out the number one seed all year long. And that's by executing their game plan perfectly. This one went their way. A couple of things went right away. And people are going to say, it's because of the running teams are, it's not that that running is back in fashion and passing isn't. It's not that. It's just that the way it went with the turnovers and getting ahead early just plays into what they want to do. Derrick Henry, with all the people you could throw at him, it's still going to be tough to bring down, tough to tackle. So there you have it. That's a little bit of what happened in the NFL divisional round. All right, so let's talk about the BCS National Championship here. And you know how fulfilling it was for me as a Tigers fan, just hearing that final victorious Go Tigers from Coach Ogeron. So proud of the boys. But LSU taking on Clemson, LSU in the Superdome, 42-25 over Clemson, bringing home that championship. Burrow and company getting the job done, setting himself up for that number one overall pick. And just a great game, a great effort. Trevor Lawrence on the other side of things had some, difficulty with the defense there. We knew they're a tough defense. We know he's tough. He's used to playing tough defenses. But, he really turned it around after like week five in the regular season. And what we saw here was a reversion to some of those early week struggles. Basically, he looked like the same guy having the same problems. So, this definitely hurts him. In terms of where people think about him versus where they were thinking about him when they, were undefeated, coming off that national championship win. Stock down a little bit. So, we'll see where he can go and bounce back from here. And he surely will be able to. But it's just room for growth. And it's just not the end of the world, but it's just not what people thought. They thought he was ready, right? So, and this shows that he's not. On the other side of things, Etienne probably, going to be a pretty good back. He looks very, very good. And then Isaiah Simmons as well in the secondary. I mean, he's like a, modern day hybrid linebacker in the NFL in terms of what teams are trying to do now, because he can play in the box, he can play in the slot, he can play out in the secondary, he can play man, he can do what you want to do, right? So, and he's got, to his credit, like over 100 snaps doing all those different things. So he's got experience showcasing it too. Very special player. He's going to be highly drafted, highly touted, and he's going to make a difference somewhere. So, teams looking for that safety presence. This is going to be the dude, or that, that outside linebacker, whatever the case may be. But really impressed with what I saw from him. On the other side of things, Joe Burrow got the job done. And, it's so funny to think that this dude couldn't get on the field in Ohio State, right? He was sitting behind Haskins and, so highly touted here. But that change of venue, he's seen a lot of impressive teams, and he's faced a lot of big time moments here, and he's battle tested. Now, that being said, and even as a Tigers fan, guys, I'm not convinced that he's going to be he's going to pay off to what they're saying he's going to be. I know he's going to be the number one pick. I know the Bengals are aiming at that. But in my personal opinion, it's not. I just think that there's going to be a little bit of a letdown. This is, to me, like, I've seen this team over so many seasons now. And LSU fields some of the finest football teams. They have churned out some of the finest football players. I mean, there is a laundry list of LSU Tigers in the NFL right now. And they just keep pumping them out year after year. And every year we're ranked so highly to that Alabama game. It's big time football. The issue is they never have a quarterback. There's a problem at the quarterback position with recruiting, guys going to other places, can't really nab that big dude. And while Burrow was great for us, again, this is a transfer from somewhere else. So not even a guy that they groom here, but it worked out, and it's just proof to me what this team, what this program can be if they get better at that position. That's what this is about to me, is getting better at that position. And now that he's gone, I don't know what's going to happen to the team again. It's very possible that they fall back into that land of relevant up until the Alabama game, unless they find another difference maker, and they have not been able to. So this will be the thing to celebrate, or I'm sorry, separate Coach Ed Orgeron from Coach Les Miles. Coach Les Miles doesn't have a job at LSU right now because they couldn't bring in that guy to be that difference maker. You can't just run the ball 60 times and think that that's going to get it done. Against those biggest and best teams out there, you do need to be more dynamic than that. And this was a very dynamic football team. Now, the other concern is not just Burrow leaving, but everybody, Dave Aranda, you know, everybody, all types of coordinators and coaches and players out of here, right? Everybody's cashing in, rightfully so, cashing in on what just happened here, because it was a historic thing that they did, knocking down so many top 10 ranked teams, six or seven in one season, the most. They're saying this is one of the best all-time teams ever, just the pure dominance. I mean, it was just unparalleled. I'm saying that with a really unbiased look at it. I know I'm an LSU fan, but that's a really unbiased look at what happened. So everybody cashing in on that. So that's the other concern for next year. It's not even just at the quarterback position, but again, just hearing Thaddeus Moss today, he's done now. You know, he's gone declaring. So now it becomes, can they, you know, as a program, stay in the top upper echelon with the cabinet being rated so thusly? Now, in my opinion, I think they can, because the win takes weight, and this will sway kids' hearts. And when kids start to envision themselves in their dreams, it's not going to be that Alabama jersey, that Alabama helmet. It's going to be that LSU Tigers helmet, right? That's the big difference maker. So, you know, as we see kids start to commit now, kids start to commit next year, things like that, I think it's got a strong future with a very authentic coach, very authentic leader at the helm, who's probably going to end up getting paid a little bit more. He's on the short side of things right now. But Dabo Swinney and company, they'll be back. You know, not worried about them. He's a great coach. His scheme speaks for itself. He's very highly paid. Don't even know why he would want to go to the pros. I mean, dude's making $9 million a year. Like, they're not going to give you that money there. So, you know, just stick it out here, man, and try to do that saving dominance thing or something. But, you know, he can go lick his wounds and come on back. There's no shame in this loss right here. This was just an extraordinary team, and they just, you know, fell in line like everybody else. So that's a look at the national championships and very hearty Go Tigers. All right, now let's do something that we have never done here at The Process, and that's take a look at some MLB news and notes. And it's because things are flaring up right now. In this day and age, you have fans that have access to all types of footage. If you have MLB.com, you can essentially watch any game that has happened already out of market over and over and over again. You can listen for sounds. You can watch themes in the videos. And if you have nothing but time on your hands all day and a computer at your access or your phone, you can actually cause a lot of problems for a lot of people and uncover a lot of things. And that's what's happened. And Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, has played a huge part in blowing this whole thing up at The Process TBSAE on Twitter. Now, Twitter is where you can find people who have cued in on some of this stuff that really spurred this MLB investigation, if you aren't really sure for some reason what we're talking about. We're talking about an investigation by Rob Manfred in the MLB front office with regard to cheating in baseball. Yes, cheating in baseball. I know it's hard to believe, but we're back here again. So we have to get into it. Unfortunately, this is dominating the news cycle even as we approach the Super Bowl. So you know that there are some particular circumstances going on right now that warrant our attention. So we're not going to gloss over it, and we're going to try to take a close look at what's going on here. So with regard to the cheating accusations, you know, Manfred and the front office are investigating that the Astros were engaged in a complicated and coordinated scheme in order to recognize the signs for the opposing teams and then communicate what the pitch would be to the players, i.e. a few different things. So, you know, I'm going to try to keep this as succinct as possible, because what happens is you start talking about this stuff and baseball is so, man, it's there, like, cheating is now, where do we go with this? It's been involved all along, it would seem. And what we really do is just keep circling around what is cheating now, or who is cheating now. But now it just seems like if it's not this, it was the PEDs, we had the betting. There was a lot going on. And this is not a new theme. We are 100 years removed from the Black Sox scandal, the 1919 Black Sox scandal, where the 1919 Chicago White Sox team, some of the players, you know, were implicit in throwing the World Series. That was 100 years ago, and here we are still talking about a scenario where players are intentionally cheating in the game for whatever reason. So, because there's been this underlying, and it's not even just that, it's like there's also this fine line thing. You know, you've got players putting substances on balls, you got players using steroids, you've got cork bats. I mean, there's all these different types of things going on. And you know, some things that players do, and they try to do a good job of limiting it, but there are some things you can do that nobody has a problem with, and there are other things that people do have a problem with. And so there's a spectrum. Anytime there's a spectrum, it just invites the action in itself, right? So this whole cheating thing, and it really, you know, what happens is you start to, because of the way Twitter is, and because people that were just really fans looking into this stuff have begun the allegations that really started this investigation, what you have now is this volume for like butthurt fans from teams that lost to other teams, if that makes sense. So you're gonna have, like, you know, some team, Houston beat your team along the way, right? And now those fans are all, they're cheating because of this and this and this, right? So there's a fair amount of that. And you had, like, you know, Yankee fans basically surmising that, you know, that they were, like, you know, like whistling or clapping or something like that to, like, steal signs. And it's like you blow it off as preposterous, but then they come back in the findings and the results of, you know, this investigation, and you find in one of the things that's discussed is that the Houston Astros had a system that was developed. It had developed into the trash can thing, but they had tried a couple of other things, you know, namely among them, the whistling and stuff like that. There's a lot of interesting pieces to this. You know, punishment coming down on management and front office, even though they weren't the ones involved. AJ Hinch, you know, once he discovered, again, if you're not familiar with exactly what was going on, they were using just basically the regular MLB broadcast, right? Because of the way that they broadcast it on TV, you know, like behind the pitcher's back, right down into the hitter's box. It's set up to show you what's going on with the signs, right? And so if you were somebody who, like, is a baseball person and is savvy, you get a perfect look at what the catcher's doing, and you could convey these things, right? So from there, what happens is apparently they had a camera set up, you know, for this, you know, purpose, and then they would then convey whether it was going to be a fastball or not to the hitter, right? And so a hit on the lid of the trash can if it's a fastball, and then if it's not, you know, it's an off-speed pitch, right? This definitely affects the pitches you're able to hit, as well as the pitches you are able to lay off on as well. So, you know, it convolutes a lot of things. It's crazy to start investigating this because it opens up a can of worms of, you know, guys wanting to dispute wins and losses and strikeouts and balls and things like that. And then where do we stop? So then it's like, this is what I mean by like, then it's like baseball's on this spectrum, right? So this is, so they use that broadcast, and AJ Hinch, for his part, you know, destroy one of the monitors. It was not, you know, it, really what they're getting it for is for not stopping it, right? Like, that's why they're getting it, because they more or less knew what was going on and didn't do anything about it. This was a player-led thing, right? This was player involvement to figure out, and now they're going a little bit further. You even have Carlos Beltran's niece now on Twitter really stirring the pot this week, you guys, if you haven't heard, coming out talking about some, you know, other accusations with regard to the buzzers, right? And so you see the video now of, because apparently what they're saying is these guys have a buzz, an electronic buzzer, right, to tell you. So now you just know based on the buzzer sent to you, buzzer signal. They're denying it. And there's the video of Altuve rounding the bases, and he's like covering his shirt, doesn't want the, you know, doesn't want to get it torn off or whatever. And, you know, there's sense because he's got the buzzer on under there. So, oh, there's a lot going on here. She's making these accusations. Meanwhile, he's been let go before he's even started his managerial job for the Mets. So now Carlos Beltran out of a job because he was one of the people literally implicated in the investigation by name. He's one of the players involved in this player-led operation here, if you will. So he's out of a job. Alex Cora out of a job in Boston as well for his involvement, trying to distance themselves because they also have, you know, another little cheating scandal of their own going on too. So the optics of this, very bad for baseball right now while you have all these moving parts, and it's just looking like, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, right? It's looking very, very bad in, you know, the wake of a league that is trying to get over the PED steroid scandal. And so it just becomes the latest thing, right? And, you know, you're looking at all this and everybody, nobody's banned but Pete Rose, which is, so I feel sorry for him, first of all. But when you look at all this and the timeline and how quickly this stuff is happening, it really gets overwhelming. So Major League Baseball announced 1-year suspensions for Astros general manager Jeff Lunau and manager AJ Hinch. The team gets the $5 million fine. And Houston, now they're stripped of the first and second round picks in 2020 and 2021. That part hurts. The $5 million part doesn't hurt. If there was a salary cap and you're taking it out of salary cap, that would hurt. But that's not the way baseball is set up. There's no salary cap in baseball. That's one of the reasons why the Yankees can be the Yankees and the Kansas City Chiefs. They don't have the spending power of them. Now, in addition to that, you know, right after this report comes out, then Jim Crane, the owner of the Houston Astros, he then fired Lunau and Hinch. So they're done. A day later, the Boston Red Sox fired Alex Cora because he was Houston's bench coach in 2017. And then on Thursday, Carlos Beltran got his, you know, that's when he got let go. So, whew, big list of, you know what, rolling downhill, and I don't think it's going to stop unless baseball does something like this. So, you know, for right now, I do think that Rob Manfred is satisfied, even though there are hush-hushes out there that there's as many as 8 teams you can implicate with regard to stealing signals and cheating. I think he's basically put the message out there with the damage with the first round picks and everything else and all that and the suspensions that this won't be tolerated. So I think he's okay with the message sent right now, and we'll go from here. But baseball, this is an image hit for a league that doesn't need it. You have to get over these illicit parts of the game if you ever hope to challenge the NFL. They are literally giving guys CTE, unfortunately, and they're still dogging you with the ratings and everything else for a lot of different reasons. I'm not saying this is it, but I'm just saying you can't get over them unless you saw demons like this. And there's a lot of them in baseball. So there's a lot of teams trying to sort some things out right now. There's a lot of stuff going on. And it's for a negative reason, unfortunately. Really, you know what we should be talking about right now is Alyssa Nakin, first full-time female coach on a major league staff in baseball history. She's under the new manager for the Giants, Gabe Kapler. She's going to be on his staff, going to travel with the team dress, going to do, you know, pregame, batting cage. So, that should be the type of story. And unfortunately, we're overshadowed by the cheating scandal. So, we're going to have to keep an eye on this one, but we definitely needed to touch on it because things have just been blowing out of the water. And as you know, we don't start the heart of the order really until football is fully clear and done. And then, you know, it's a little bit of a break and then we get into that. So wanted to do something to accommodate both audiences. So, yeah, and just, you know, we'll kind of keep an eye on this thing, but guys, just follow the Tiger Bomb information. The Heart of the Order stuff is there too, right at the website. Even on the Tiger Bomb Sports Audio Entertainment Facebook page, you can get to the Heart of the Order Facebook page there too. So check it all out. But more importantly, let's stay involved with this because this is all really important as, you know, they're getting ready to enter into a new CBA right now, collective bargaining agreement, the owners and the players association, and all this stuff matters in terms of the outcome with the agreement. And this is all on the heels of the agreements are going to look different anyway, guys. The last CBA that they came to was in an era where, because of PEDs, we assumed that guys were going to be 38 years old popping 40 home runs a year, right? We thought that was realistic. And now it comes to truth that that's not it. It was cheating, right? So, but the contracts now reflect that. This is why you have these balloon contracts. Like, look at Matt Kemp's contract, right? This is why you have that. Things like that are going to get solved within this next collective bargaining agreement. But this is just another part that will, have to be played into all that too. So it's just going to be really interesting as they come to that down the road here soon and how it affects everything. But that's our look at, you know, Major League Baseball, and I look at the cheating scandal, sadly, as it's going on right now. And so we'll end our episode this week with a look at the conference championship and some DFS picks. All right, well, finally today, let's take a look at the conference championship. And why don't we start with the Packers at 49ers to begin our analysis. And, of course, they played week 12, I believe it was, and Green Bay got demolished by the 49ers. And that was the last time that they lost the game, actually. So, you know, Green Bay's coach, part of the coaching tree of the San Francisco coach. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the 49ers coach right now. Kyle Shanahan. So, yeah, part of his coaching tree. And so there's like this whole, like, again, chess dynamic of knowing what that person's going to do based on a familiarity of, you know, being a part of that, staff, very recently. So there's a lot of that going on in this matchup. Now, Shanahan got the better part of it the last time that they faced. So we'll have to see how it turns out this time. I really do think that it's always dangerous when teams play each other twice in one year, just because you've seen so much of what they wanted to show you before. So Matt LaFleur, I think, as a head coach, you know, here's what I'm thinking. In the initial matchup, it's like if I was assisting you and then you and then I go do my own thing as head coach, maybe I have ways in my head that I think that we could have improved upon your system. So I have the advantage of, with my new team, knowing your system, but then I'm also thinking about the things that I want to do to improve on that. And so unless I've explicitly shared those things with you while we were coaching, I don't necessarily think that you know, you'd have an advantage. So I think I thought that the advantage would be to LaFleur, and they got the floor mop with them. So I think it could be a scenario of where the things that you want to do different are wrong compared to him, or maybe they're just a better team. So it makes this matchup a little bit more interesting, because we'll have to see if he has changed his game plan up or if they stick to what they want to do. Now, the 49ers have some pretty good, you know, corners in the secondary, and again, the pass rush really sets up a lot of what they want to do. So for Green Bay, they're going to have to give Aaron Rodgers a little bit of time to get it to his boy Devontae Adams. That's his real weapon out there that he's going to have to try to exploit. Everybody else is going to have a very hard time in their coverage. I do think that it's going to be, you know, a game where, like, basically what Green Bay wants to do is run some of those. You have to get, like, you want to get separation, because the 49ers are going to try to press you, and they're going to try to keep that separation so that the rush can get there and get that sack. Green Bay has given up some sacks. Like even though Rodgers has had a long time to throw, like he's had like a pretty decent average of seconds to throw, he's still taking a lot of sacks. So, you know, a part of what the 49ers want to do is press you at the line and then back those guys off into coverage, you know, and really dare you to try to throw when it's very contested like that, because the rush is coming. So to sort of, you know, help gain separation, what you really want to do is, you know, outs and comebacks and curls and things like that. Routes that are literally designed to, you know, do just that. So I think that there's going to be some of that. There needs to be balance for Green Bay if they want to win this game. Like, Aaron Jones isn't just going to take off and run all over the place, but you've got to be prepared to run the football with him anyway and try to create some balance there. And you'd have to, you know, like, you got to understand that that is probably the better way to attack Green Bay. So, well, I'm sorry, to attack the 49ers. I mean, even though they're good on both facets of defense, trying to run at them, and that's what you do when they're pass rushing you hard like that. You run right at it, right? So I think that that's a very good opportunity for them to try to keep Aaron Jones in the game. But really what you want to do is run the football, run those comeback routes, and then Aaron Jones can take his proverbial shots and his chances at halftime like he likes to do, right? Try to get that pass interference penalty, set yourself up for an easy run by Jones on the 1 yard line into the, you know, the goal or something like that. So that's what they're going to try to, you know, want to do. Defensively, you want to force Garoppolo to make one of those mistakes we were talking about earlier. He will make mistakes. He also has problems with the linebackers. Like, basically, like, you know, not like he has problems, you know, with turnovers to them, like not seeing them in coverage, not knowing where they're going to, you know, go and stuff like that. But he, you know, it can be exploited. And this is going to be a matchup to where, you know, Blake Martinez, he is capable enough to take advantage of something like that. So Garoppolo is going to have to try to limit the mistakes. But you guys are going to see, this is one of the reasons why I think you can go with Green Bay in the DFS world this weekend, because I think that they can get that interception. If they stay in this game, it's going to be off of turnovers, and that's what it's going to be off of right there. It's going to be like picking the ball off there, and they've got good safety, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Ultimately for them, love that Tevin Coleman got involved last week, ran him out in DFS, so that was a perfect pick right there. They have great running backs. I think Breed is relevant this week, and I do like him as a low-end cash salary saver versus, like, say, Jamal Williams, who more people are going to be attracted to. So I think he's a nice pivot, and I'd be interested in that. There's an opportunity for the 49ers to, you know, really put the you know, foot on the gas and play their style of football, and that really starts with establishing the run. I think that Burita is going to be involved in the pass game, so I like him a lot, and if they get out in front of Green Bay, that takes away their ability to run the football. So I think, you know, it's all about limiting the mistakes. If it's a close game, it's going to be because Garoppolo was making mistakes, but Kittle should be involved. I like that Kittle should be, you know, a primary target for him. And I know he's been a little banged up, but they're going to have to try to force the issue. You want to get things going over the middle of the field, then it's going to be Kittle, right? So they're going to be looking for him, and they have to hope that he draws attention to open things up for the outside too. So for the, as far as the receivers go, I think their hands are going to be full. They're going to be playing a primary distraction mode unless somebody just busts one and get open, but I don't really see that. But I do think that, you know, Kittle, Breida, these guys are in play for sure. Now, as far as what's going to happen, I'm going to have to go with the 49ers. I do think that they win this game again. I do think that they're just a better team. And, you know, Green Bay's on the road. It's going to be an uphill battle. And I'm just going to take the home team in this one and say that the 49ers are the ones who advance. And on the other side of things, the Titans at the Chiefs could be a much closer game. This one is not going to be a game where, you know, like, here's the thing. If, unless the, you know, the Titans are going to force two turnovers and be up 14-0 again, you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be a game that plays out like the last one where they can just run the clock out. They're going to need to score points, is my point. They're going to need to, like, the Ravens were happy to try to run the ball. The Kansas City Chiefs do not want to run the ball. 30% of the time they run the ball, 70% of the time they're passing. So that's the weakness of the Titans. I know their numbers and their optics are looking a little better, but it's just because of the run game. That's all that it is. Like, the pass secondary defense is not that good for Tennessee. Their opportunity to be on the field is being diminished by the offensive time of possession, and their run game is smash mouth football. So I'm not buying into that they're going to slow down Mahomes. I think that he is the DFS quarterback this weekend, and it's just about, like, what you build around him, just because the opportunity, the upside there doesn't exist with any other quarterback that's playing this weekend. So, you know, I think that this is all going to be about, can Kansas City get out there and get to a lead and force the Titans to play keep up, because the Titans will want to run an extraordinary amount of the time. Last week, even down to, when these teams played during the season, when they played earlier this year, you know, Tennessee was running inside of 3 minutes, like, as a part of their way to move the ball downfield. So, they want to run a lot. In Kansas City, we just saw them score 51 points. And so when you have a team doing that, they just really force your hand. If it comes to that, I just don't see how A.J. Brown and company are going to be able to keep up with them. In fact, he's going to be covered by Bashaud Braylon. So I think that he's going to continue to stay quiet in these playoffs, like he's been in the first couple of games there. It's going to be interesting. I think, Tyreek Hill, he's going to see his fair share of Tremaine Brock. And this dude's been targeted 17 times in the playoffs already. So, there's a reason why people are doing that. And I think Tyreek Hill could have a great day. I'm very interested in him for DFS purposes. And this is, again, like I said, just, you know, if they can control the clock with the run. We know Kansas City can't stop the run. We know that. But the thing is, they can just blow Tennessee out of the water. I really do think that they force Tennessee to have to try to play keep up. Tennessee would be fortunate if, like, in a perfect world, it's like Kansas City scores. Okay, great. But then they methodically run it down, run clock, and then they score. And then Kansas City scores, great. Okay, but then they methodically run. That's what they're thinking that they want to have happen. But if Kansas City stops you even one time, that's what I'm saying is the problem, because then they're up by two. They stop you two times, then they're up by three scores, right? Now it's a 21-point game. This is how things get out of hand for you. I think Kansas City's defense is good enough to get a couple stops on Tennessee, but Tennessee, I don't see them being able to slow Mahomes down, especially after giving them that look of what they want to do to them earlier in the season. So I do think Kansas City wins. And if we look at FanDuel, though, the thing about it is I cannot, like, I want to go with Mahomes, but I don't know if I can afford it. And if you can't afford it, like, you have to try to go with Tannehill, hoping that what I said happens. That's the only other option, is that he has to try to play keep up. they are taxing you so much on Mahomes that there's nothing that I can build around that that makes sense. If you use Tannehill, then I can go Mostert and Jones for my running backs, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, Scantling, Travis Kelce, and then Coleman in the flex, and then the Green Bay defense. I told you already earlier how I like Green Bay's defense. I got exposure to Coleman as well as Mostert because I think that they could both come into play, both be affecting the outcome of this game, and 49ers could potentially just try to run it a lot. So, you know, but I still got exposure to Adams and Kelce and Hill, who I think are all dangerous this weekend. So that's the big reason for going with Tannehill there. So again, 7,700 Tannehill, 5,800 Mostert, 7,800 Aaron Jones, 7,400 Tyreek Hill, 8,300 Devontae Adams, 4,600 Valdez Scantling, Travis Kelce is 7,800, Tevin Coleman 6,500, and then Green Bay Packers defense at 4,000. And honestly, guys, Valdez Scantling, I get it if you're not necessarily sold on that. I'm just looking to see what Ferkser's price is, because if he's actually if he's cheaper than that, I would probably go with him. Let's check it out. Let's see. See if we can't replace our man. Oh no, is he too expensive? Here, let's search like this. I don't see him. Weird. Oh, he might be a tight end. All right. I'll have to take a look at that. But yeah, so I would stick with that then. But yes, very interested in the Green Bay Packers defense just based off of the price point. And like I said, the fact that Garoppolo seems destined to make mistakes. So I think that they can rack up the points. Ultimately, if we look at the DraftKings side of things, let's take a look now. Now, we can afford Mahomes on DraftKings, so that right there is encouraging, and so I feel better about having to hedge my bets on FanDuel, because he's only 7,700 over here versus like 9,500 over there. So got him going there, and over here, here's the thing. I have Aaron Jones, 6,700, Devontae Adams, 7,900, Corey Davis, 4,000, Tyreek Hill, 7,200, Travis Kelce, 7,100, Jonnu Smith, 3,400, Packers defense, 2,400. So to make it work, I had to use Breida, 3,400, at the other running back position, and I did explain earlier that I like him better than Jamal Williams. So that's kind of what I'm going with for better or worse, trying to be a little different, trying to win some tournaments and take a little step forward. But you know, again, to summarize, I think that the 49ers win, and then on the other side of things, I think the Chiefs win, and sets us up for a pretty exciting Super Bowl there. So that's it, boys and girls. That's what I have for you this week. I'm excited to watch these games, though, and see if they unfold how we do. Let me know. You know the Twitter handle. You know all that stuff. If you have questions for DFS or you need to kick something around, but let's try to bring in a haul. All right. Well, there we have it. That is our conference championship all everything show. Hope you enjoyed all the segments, and again, you know all the places to find us. So like and subscribe, check us out at tigerbombsae.com, and remember, this is always your home for football and fantasy football, where we learn, scout, win, and repeat. Peace. The process is brought to you by Tiger Bomb Sports Audio Entertainment LLC.